This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The latest hearing in the Karen Reed case did not just focus on evidence. It turned into a courtroom showdown over credibility, legal ethics, and potential misconduct. The judge did not rule immediately, which means she's carefully weighing the prosecution's claims that Reed's defense team hid financial ties with expert witnesses and possibly influenced testimony. This raises huge questions, not just about the legal battle, but about how investigations are conducted, how evidence is handled, and whether bias could be at play in the courtroom. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining us. Jen, as you've dealt with high-stakes investigations where credibility is everything, from an investigative standpoint, how do we separate legitimate concerns about legal misconduct from potential courtroom theatrics? And what signs do you look for to determine whether bias or manipulation may be at play here?
Well, hi, Tony. And I think the number one thing you look for is corroboration of such allegations. In this case, there is a signed agreement, an expert agreement. There is fiduciary proof that money changed hands.
Mm-hmm.
There are trial transcripts that include not only what was said in open court, but also what was said in sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may recall Judge Cannone, the first thing she did at the beginning of that hearing was she said, I want my sidebar transcript entered into evidence as an exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
That was critical when I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that really stood out to me was that I couldn't believe when Alessi took the reins in this thing. In other words, Yannetti, Alan Jackson, they were not willing to stand up for themselves. You've seen in the past during this trial, mm-hmm, when other issues have come up. As an example, the expert, you know, dog individual, when she first was introduced, there were lots of issues too.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly these same issues, discovery issues, Rule 14 related, as well as who meant who. Did, mm-hmm, she call? Did you guys call? Who sought who, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a tete-a-tete back and forth between Cannone and Alan Jackson then, because Alan Jackson told another mistruth. And Cannone catches him. And then how Jackson, you know, finishes it, you know, is basically tomato, tomato. All right. Does it really matter whether I contacted her or she contacted me? And everybody's like, well, yeah, it does, because you just said one thing and it was the other.
Yeah.
So this is all proof, Tony. I mean, this is all facts and transcripts and sworn words. Remember, when a lawyer talks, they're not just a lawyer in the courtroom. They are an officer of the court, and they are withholden to possibly being charged with contempt.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that that won't be a possibility, mm-hmm, in her mind.
Yeah, it's really been shocking to watch, and especially when the defense did reply a bit the other day to Cannone. You could hear it, even if you weren't watching it. You could hear in their voices there was some fear. There was some crackling. You could almost hear in some of the responses of, oh shit. What gets me about this whole thing is Alan Jackson, the team, they're experienced attorneys. They have a good track records. They're not, like I've said before, it's not Better Call Saul, you know, working at the end of a mini mart. They're, you know, pretty good firms and such. Why would they put themselves in this situation, you know, and in a pro bono case and in a very highly publicized microscopes on it case where this sort of thing would surely get caught? Can this be explained away as, we screwed up and then we just kept going and hopefully don't get caught? I mean, what was going on here?
Well, you touched on a couple of things that I think are true misnomers. First of all, they're getting money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know he went on camera and on national television said, none of us are getting paid now. You know, all, mm-hmm, of a sudden, no one's getting paid. We're all doing this because of principle. I don't believe it. If you look at the GoFundMe that's been established, and it's not GoFundMe because they refuse to assist alleged killers, but the other forum that's being used right now, they've raised right around $700,000. And if you look at where it's going, it clearly states it's his office. I mean, he's the one that's running the show with that money. How it's being dispersed, Lord only knows. We don't really know. But so I think it is a misnomer. I know that's what he wants to come out and say. And to me, he's really made his bet here.
Yeah.
Because now you have fraud.
Yeah.
Because the entirety of the GoFundMe, and I hate to keep saying it, GoFundMe.
Yeah, it's another platform, but we don't need
it's another platform.
Yeah,
we don't need to shame them. Yeah. Well, actually, I would if I could remember the name of the platform. But in any event, that money very specifically says for legal defense, for her, attorney's fees, for her attorneys in this matter and her legal defense. Well, if they're not getting paid, other than experts, what is all that money being used for?
That's a good question.
That is the issue now that he's really raised. They need to change that and say for wardrobe, limos, Botox, and all the other items that could be going to. But just to say it's for legal defense now is really, I think, misleading. Second of all, you said, listen, this is a big law firm. There are a lot of amazing law firms that get a lot of money, but it does not mean they are scrupulous.
Sure.
Absolutely seen some of the... I always said the attorneys that were typically completely by the book and worked so hard for their clients, you're not going to believe this. They were federal public defenders or state public defenders. They work truly because of what they believe in, not just to make money. And so you look at people that are in the private sector. We obviously know Alan Jackson started out as a prosecutor and, you know, prosecuted a very, very famous Alan Spector and did a fabulous job and was well respected as a prosecutor. But some go over to the defense side and it's a whole new show. And I've seen it with him. I mean, really from the beginning of this case, I pointed this out. Many people did. Just commiserating with your client in the same hotel, drinking, drinking lunches, drinking happy hours, drinking nightlife, all of that commiserating is absolutely unusual in a normal, usual attorney-client situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it doesn't happen because it does, but that's when you start getting so gray. You really do.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I mean, you end up sometimes going to greater lengths for someone that you have more of a personal type relationship with and not necessarily just attorney client in a situation like that. And that's where you can definitely fall into those areas. What was your reaction to, in the Karen Reed case, the scripted Q&A document that allegedly was given to the ARCA experts, where you got your questions and you literally have like the answers in the margins on the side? That didn't seem very normal. And obviously, you know, we can go into the whole thing where, you know, the jury didn't realize that these were defense witnesses. That's obviously a big deal. But in any way, shape, or form, having like scripted answers on the stand, your own witness or not, I've not heard of that.
Well, the mischaracterization that they weren't paid, that there was no and a lot of people are picking, you know, nitpicking, right? They're saying, well, they were actually paid after. Well, that's how it works, everyone.
Yes.
it's shocking that people don't understand how these expert witnesses work with their attorneys. Yes, oftentimes there's a retainer, but remember in this case, the lion's share of all their work was done. And that is going through documents and writing a report. That's the big kahuna. And then if you need testimony later on, that would either come out of the retainer or, in this case, a brand new agreement. And you can only bill when you know what it costs. What's my airfare? How much time did I spend waiting?
Yeah.
You know, how long did I testify? How long did you pre-try me? You know, in other words, ask me questions.
Sure.
It's unusual, I have to tell you, for an expert witness to have a big, long session of pre-trying. Experts are going to stand on their opinion. It's not a fact.
It's because they're the experts.
Yes. They're not supposed to be told what to say. They are supposed to say what they know from the facts. And so this Q&A back and forth that you spoke of, never seen it. I've been doing expert witness work for, oh my gosh, since 2017-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Never has an attorney sent me anything like that.
Yeah.
Usually, actually, your communication with attorneys is kind of limited, and it's usually just spoken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might call you up, where are we at? What's your opinion leaning toward? What are you thinking about this? And then you tell them, and they say, okay, okay.
Yeah. Then they decide what to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very, very, I mean, for me, it's just, it's head shaking on both ends of it too. I mean, we've all heard the testimony of the ARCA witness, you know, Wolf, were you paid by the defense? No. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met me? No. Did you have any relationship with me? No. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the sum total. And it was a barrage of questions and a barrage of no's. And I don't know how he could ever, ever be hired by anybody after that. I really don't, because that's just blatant lying on the stand from what I saw.
It's going to be interesting to see if sanctions are used here against the defense. And if they do sanction Alan Jackson or any of them or fire them, or if the judge says, sorry, bye-bye, you got to go. That's going to be interesting, especially if it's just like Alan Jackson alone and they keep the case kind of going, you know, and the trial comes up close to where it was scheduled to. How is a jury going to look at that? Is a jury going to even know about that, I guess? I mean, could that be brought up in the case itself once you have a jury seated?
Well, when you look at this case, they are not, as far as I know, and I've always, you know, I've been screaming, please pull your jury pool out of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
At least you have some chance that you have all these blue collar workers and all these other people in industry over there, you know, white collar people that might not have heard about this.
Yes.
I've met so many on planes. I've talked about it before. When you take from a big city, you have a really good chance. If they keep taking from in and around Denham and Canton, it's going to be a disaster. And they will, I think, know all about this, everything that's happening on social media, and probably already be set one way or the other in their opinions on this case. And but will Jackson be removed? We all know he's on a pro hac vice, which says, okay, you're only here by the grace of the judge.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to allow you, but Yannetti is really the lead. I mean, Yannetti is the actual Massachusetts barred attorney, and he's responsible for you. And you saw both of them didn't say anything, except at the end, Jackson, and this was so telling too. When the information came up about the, I want to remember the particular point that he made. Oh, the Brenham had said that Jackson continues to lie. Even yesterday, he went to, I believe it was Christina Rex in the media, and she asked him, did you pay ARCA for their testimony? And he said, no, we don't have an agreement. You know, the same spiel. And Brenham was trying to point out, see, even now he's not contrite. And then the judge asked, that was the only time that the judge specifically asked Alan Jackson, did you say that? And he stood up and he said, yeah, and I'm telling you that right now. We didn't pay for testimony. You see, Tony, how he's skewing, you know, pay for testimony. Well, without paying, guess what? They're not coming.
Yeah. It's basically lying by omission, and depending on the timeline that we're talking about, it's yeah. The FBI has now stated that they're not going to be pursuing charges against law enforcement for the alleged misconduct that went on in this case. Basically, talking about some very unkindly words, at the end of the day. And of course, there's allegations of, tampering, this or that. None of that's ever been proven. But the fact that the FBI has said the investigation's done into all this, and with Karen Reed, pretty much on the bandwagon of, look, there is something shady going on here with law enforcement, and the FBI saying, no, there's not. We looked at it. Is that going to affect a jury differently than it did the first time around when there was an investigation going on?
Well, I think if they look, again, if they look at a jury pool from this area, many of them are going to know these details. So, Tony, yes, I think it does have an effect. But for those who have been prior FBI, who have been U.S. attorneys before, any pundit that you see said long ago when the TUI information came out and there were 3,000 plus pages of information and nothing happened and that trial went on, months ago, all of us said, this investigation is done. And we explained how it works. There's grand jury investigations, and unless you call for a vote on a true bill or a no bill, many investigations go through the grand jury process and just die on the vine. Mm-hmm. They're never asked to make a decision. It just ends because there's nothing there, and that prosecutor has nothing to charge. So it just ends. Mm-hmm. Many, many, many investigations happen that way. And so for most of us, we tried to point this out. So in other words, I think it was a long time ago that this was decided, but it's just coming to a definitive light. And I'm glad, for heaven's sakes, with the new U.S. attorney, Joshua Levy didn't want to say that because all this happened under his watch. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he wanted to stand up and, with his tail between his legs and say, we couldn't find anything but a few messages to his high school friends and sister that were really ugly, because that's what it came down to. Yeah. And that came out in court as well.
Sure. And it makes it, they had really no skin in the game on this. If they had found something, it would have come out, but they didn't find anything. And we kind of have to, be okay with that decision, even if some folks thought you're going to find more there. And well, no, you really didn't. Do you think Karen Reed knew when all these things were going on, what was going on, or was this all kind of done behind her back? It's work of the attorneys, where you're not going to sit there and know if they're crossing every T and dotting every single I, because that's their job over here. Your job is to be defended by them. And how do you think she is reacting now when the attorneys are going through this, possibly being sanctioned, possibly being kicked off? I can't imagine she's in a very secure place right now.
Well, she's a smart lady, and every defendant is different. Some defendants just turn everything over and say, you handle everything, I trust you. And other defendants are extremely involved in their defense. I believe she is on the complete right side, an 11 out of 10 involved in her defense, involved in what's going to happen, influencing of the attorneys, and quite frankly, legally, they can't make decisions for their client. They can make them on behalf of their client. But for instance, if a client doesn't want to plead guilty, they can't force them to.
Yeah.
And same with not guilty and all these other items. So your question is, did she knew 100%? 100% she knew. She's a lot of things, but she is not dumb and she's not ignorant and she's not a wallflower. She is all over this case and all over in this investigation. And quite frankly, this really helps her, because if they are kept on the case and just with what they've done, I just keep thinking of possible appellate issues.
Yep.
But if the judge removes them from the case, we have also appellate issues. So she's kind of the catbird in the seat right now.
Yeah. It's almost a get a new trial free card that she's getting if she is in fact convicted for ineffective counsel, is the argument that she could easily make, and probably be granted, which means we could go up to a third Karen Reed trial in theory. Oh, let's hope it doesn't get there.
Let's hope it doesn't get there. I think everybody, you know, especially Judge Cannone, I mean, she can't get this trial over with quick enough. And, you know, everybody noticed when all of this happened, she was shaking.
Yeah.
Visibly shaking. And, you know, my read at the time was, you know, this is a woman who now realizes what's in jeopardy. That if she takes this person who has completely disrespected her, who is really in contempt of court, some would say he's committed fraud because of the different documents that were produced.
Yeah. I mean,
there's some attorneys out there saying that, and I don't know if they're wrong, that she knew what this meant for this trial. Mm-hmm. Possible postponement, possible Sixth Amendment, possible being overturned no matter what decision she makes. She realized the gravity very early on of what they had done.
Yeah. And we will find out very soon what those consequences will be.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.